Welcome to Thea Annorum, a historical fiction podcast from StoryOmniverse.com. This story is titled Wolves on the Danube. Step into the year ahead and witness history as if you were there. Chapter 1. Dawn on the Edge. The first rays of morning broke over the mist-laden Danube, turning the river into a silver serpent, dividing the Roman world from the wild north. In the sprawling camp at Aquincum, Lucius Valerius tightened his sagum cloak against the chill and inhaled the river's raw scent. All his life, he had dreamt of wearing the centurion's transverse crest. Now, at 26, command weighed heavier than expected. The legionaries around him stirred from their straw beds, rubbing sleep from their eyes as they prepared for drill and breakfast. Red-tunicked soldiers trudged between tents, carrying wooden practice swords and battered shields. Fires flickered under iron kettles where millet porridge boiled. Lucius's thoughts returned to his orders. Rome's borders strained under pressure. In the east, rebellion simmered, and here on the Danube, the Quadi and Sarmatians raided Roman lands with increasing audacity. The news from Rome was no comfort. Emperor Gordian III, barely older than Lucius, faced rivals on every side. Gaius, his optio, a grizzled Gaul with a scarred face, approached, saluting with a clenched fist. Centurion, the men are worried. The Quadi were sighted on the eastern bank last night. Lucius nodded, his mind already turning to the watch rotations. Double the sentries tonight, and tell the men, Rome has not abandoned them. Gaius grinned wryly. Ay, sir, they trust you, even if Rome is distant. As the sun rose higher, the camp came alive. Armorers hammered Larica segmentata plates, cavalrymen curried their horses, and young recruits recited Latin drills under the centurion's sharp gaze. Lucius paused to watch the river, its uncertain surface reflecting his own doubts. Would his leadership hold, or would the wolves beyond the Danube find a weakness to exploit? Chapter 2. Rumors in the Night. That evening, the firelight flickered against canvas tents as soldiers gathered for their ration of bread and dried figs. The talk was low, anxious. Lucius, after making his rounds, sat on a log at the edge of the camp, staring into the flames. Aurelia, daughter of a Romanized Pannonian trader and known in camp as a healer, sat beside him. Her linen dress was stained with herbal tinctures, and her hands bore the marks of tending wounds. She offered him a cup of watered wine. "Your men are restless," Aurelia said, her voice hushed. "They whisper about the East, about the Emperor's troubles with the Persians." Lucius sighed. The Emperor is young, but he must face Sassanid aggression and plots in the Senate. Here, on the frontier, all we have is each other. Aurelia smiled faintly. The tribes know Rome wavers. Some say it is time for old debts to be repaid in blood.
They'll test our strength, Lucius replied. But if we show weakness, all will be lost. A shout interrupted them, a runner from the northern watchtower. Centurion, riders on the far bank. Lucius rose at once, signaling for Gaius. He squinted through the gloom, spotting torchlight moving between the trees across the river. The message was clear. The Quadi watched, waiting for the night's cover. As the camp braced for a possible raid, Lucius's heart pounded. He sent for the cavalry to patrol the riverbank and ordered the archers to ready their bows. The Danube, dark and wide, seemed to pulse with danger. Aurelia laid a hand on Lucius's arm before she left. Strength, Centurion. The gods favor the vigilant. Sleep was scarce that night. Lucius wandered the camp, listening for every crack of branch or distant howl. Rome's fate, it seemed, hung on the thin edge of a sword.
Chapter 3. The River Test. With dawn came the command. Scouts had tracked a Quadi war party crossing upstream. Lucius ordered his cohort to muster before the standard, red cloaks pulled tight, shields painted with the wolf and eagle. The men moved with disciplined haste, though the tension was palpable. The crossing was perilous. Spring rains had swelled the Danube, turning its current treacherous. Using pontoon boats and hastily bound rafts, the Romans ferried across, armor gleaming and pila held high. Lucius's heart thudded as his raft bumped against the far shore, reeds clutching at the hull. On the northern bank, the world changed. The land was thick with pine and birch, the ground soft underfoot. Roman discipline met barbarian cunning. Within moments, shouts rang out. Quadi warriors burst from behind the trees, their shields painted with animal totems, spears glittering in the morning sun. Form testudo, Lucius barked. The Romans locked shields overhead as arrows thudded against the interlocked wood and iron. When the barrage ceased, Lucius gave the order. Advance. The clash was furious. Steel against bronze. Latin curses against guttural war cries. Gaius fought by Lucius's side, his sword swinging in practiced arcs. The Quadi were fierce, but the Roman line held. After a brutal few minutes, the attackers broke, fleeing into the tangled forest. Breathing hard, Lucius surveyed the cost. 2 dead, 5 wounded. The Danube was no longer a wall. Prepare to withdraw, he commanded. As the cohort retreated, Lucius felt both pride and dread. The river had tested them, and though they had survived, more trials would come. Chapter 4, The Sarmatian Bargain. Back at camp, the wounded were tended. Aurelia moved swiftly among them, mixing willow bark for pain and applying honey to cuts. The men trusted her silent competence, grateful for her gentle words. That afternoon, a Sarmatian delegation arrived. Riders astride tall, shaggy horses, their scale armor catching the light. At their head rode Arpad, a chieftain known for both cunning and ambition. His hair was braided with copper wire, and his voice carried the authority of a born leader. Centurion Lucius, Arpad announced in passable Latin, the Quadi threaten us as they threaten Rome. My people propose an alliance. Lucius eyed him warily. Sarmatians were famous for their prowess on horseback, but also for their shifting loyalties. Still, the legion was stretched thin. Rome values brave allies, Lucius replied. But our trust must be earned. Arpad inclined his head. Give us arms, and together we'll drive the Quadi back. In return, we offer cavalry and scouts. The Roman officers murmured among themselves, some approving, others suspicious. Gaius voiced the doubt many felt. Can we trust them, sir? Sarmatians have turned on Rome before. Lucius weighed the choice. We must adapt. Rome alone cannot hold the line forever. Later, Aurelia found Lucius by the water as dusk fell. You risk much by trusting them, she warned. Without risk, there is only defeat. Lucius replied. A pact was struck. The Sarmatians would ride with the legion, their fate tied for now to Rome's. Lucius sent notice to his superiors, praying the gamble would not doom them all. Chapter 5, Seeds of Betrayal. With Sarmatian warriors camped beside Roman tents, mistrust simmered. The clatter of foreign tongues at night set some soldiers' teeth on edge. Rumors flew. A missing dagger, a quarrel over rations, a Sarmatian scout seen too close to the supply wagons. Lucius met regularly with Arpad, mapping the river valleys and discussing Quadi movements. The Sarmatians' insight proved valuable. Their scouts reported Quadi warbands massing in the forests east of Aquincum, readying for a major assault. But within his own ranks, Lucius sensed a dangerous mood. Marcus, a legion veteran with scars from campaigns in Dacia, confronted him in the grain tent. We are Romans, centurion, not mercenaries. These Sarmatians cannot be trusted. Some of the men talk of desertion if you keep siding with them.
Lucius met his gaze. We have no choice. Rome's legions are stretched. If we divide, we're finished. That night, a theft was discovered. A cache of Pila vanished from the armory. Suspicion fell on both Sarmatian and Roman malcontents. Gaius led an investigation, but the culprit proved elusive. Aurelia, ever perceptive, warned Lucius. Your men must feel heard, or resentment will fester. Remember, a commander rules hearts as well as bodies. Lucius ordered extra rations and paid the men from his own purse. He held a council, where Roman and Sarmatian shared food and stories. Slowly, suspicion eased, though danger still circled. Then the word came. A Quadi host, thousands strong, moved toward Aquincum. The alliance would be tested not by words, but by steel.
Chapter 6. The Siege of Aquincum. The attack began at dawn. Aquincum, with its stone walls and tiled roofs, had seen centuries of peace and commerce. Now the city quaked under the onslaught of barbarian fury. Quadi warriors hammered at the gates with felled trees, their war horns blaring. Inside, civilians cowered, and soldiers rushed to the walls, slinging stones and launching bolts from scorpios. Lucius led his cohort to the battlements. The air was thick with the reek of burning pitch and the screams of wounded men. Gaius, helmet dented and face streaked with soot, fought beside him, rallying younger soldiers. Arpad's Sarmatian horsemen harried the Quadi flanks, loosing arrows from horseback and darting away before counterattack. The city's defenders, heartened by their allies' courage, redoubled their efforts. Still, with each passing hour, the pressure mounted. Inside the city, Aurelia tended the wounded in the Temple of Mithras, now a makeshift infirmary. She moved between the groaning bodies, setting bones and comforting the dying. News filtered in. Food stores burned, water wells tainted by saboteurs. On the fourth day, the Quadi breached the outer gate. Lucius ordered a desperate sortie, leading a charge that scattered the attackers long enough for carpenters to reinforce the barricade. He fought with grim determination, every wound and loss etching itself into his soul. As the sun set on the fifth day, Lucius stood atop the battered walls, bloodied but unbowed. The city still stood, but at a terrible cost. Looking out over the devastated plain, he knew the siege was not over, and that only unity could save them.
Chapter 7. The Price of Command. The siege dragged on, the city's resources dwindling. Lucius moved ceaselessly between the walls, the armory, and the infirmary, exhaustion etched into his face. His men looked to him for hope, but he felt the weight of every lost life. During a night assault, disaster struck. Gaius, his steadfast optio, was killed by a Quadi javelin while defending a breach near the baths. Lucius reached him moments too late, blood soaking the sand. Gaius's final words were faint. Hold them, Lucius. Rome endures. The loss shattered Lucius. In the temple, Aurelia found him cradling Gaius's helmet. You mourn deeply, she said, her own eyes red from tending the maimed. But grief can forge resolve. Lucius nodded, swallowing his pain. He was more than a friend. He was the soul of our cohort. Aurelia squeezed his hand. Lead them, Lucius, not for Rome, but for those who still live. He returned to the ramparts, rallying the defenders. When a breach threatened the forum, he led a counterattack, sword flashing in the torchlight. The men, inspired by his courage and example, held firm. Later that night, he gathered the officers and Sarmatian leaders. We cannot wait for relief, Lucius declared. We must break the siege ourselves. Tomorrow, we strike at dawn. The men nodded, grim but resolute. The cost had been high, but the city's spirit remained unbroken.
Chapter 8. The Breaking of the Siege. With dawn, a thick fog blanketed the fields outside Aquincum. Lucius seized the moment. He ordered the gates thrown open and led a mixed force of legionaries and Sarmatian cavalry in a surprise sortie. The Quadi, unprepared for a sally, reeled under the sudden assault. Arpad's horsemen thundered through enemy ranks, scattering archers and torchbearers. Roman infantry advanced shield to shield, driving the attackers from the city's battered walls. Lucius fought at the front, his red crest a rallying point. The clangor of battle echoed across the river plain, and the morning air was thick with the acrid smell of sweat, blood, and churned mud. After hours of desperate combat, the Quadi host began to break. Some fled into the forests, others surrendered. The battered defenders raised a cheer as the enemy's banners fell. The siege was over. Aquincum, though scarred, stood free, still belonged to Rome. Lucius ordered the city gates secured and sent patrols to sweep the surrounding woods. He met with Arpad, clasping wrists in thanks. "Without your riders, we would have fallen." Arpad nodded, pride in his eyes. "You kept your word. Sarmatians remember such things." In the aftermath, Lucius oversaw the burial of the dead and the distribution of precious food to the hungry. Aurelia and her helpers tended survivors, their faces gaunt but determined. Rome's power had held, but only through sacrifice and unlikely brotherhood. Lucius, battered but alive, allowed himself a brief smile as the city's bells rang out in victory.
Chapter 9. The Emperor's Shadow. A week after the siege broke, a Roman envoy arrived, Decimus, stern and impeccably garbed, bearing the imperial seal of Gordian III. He demanded an audience with Lucius, who met him in the governor's ruined hall. "Centurion Valerius," Decimus began, "your defense of Aquincum has reached the Emperor's ears. Rome needs strong men. Come to the capital. There are rewards for those who stand firm in the Empire's hour of need." Lucius listened, torn. The offer was tempting, a chance to rise in rank, perhaps even command a legion. Yet his gaze drifted to the battered city outside. The people he had fought beside, the graves that dotted the field, the Sarmatian allies who had shed blood for Rome. As Decimus departed, Aurelia joined Lucius under the portico. "Do you long for Rome?" she asked softly. He shook his head. "Rome is here, in these stones and in these people, not just in marble palaces." Her eyes searched his. "Then what will you choose?" Lucius hesitated, knowing the choice was his alone. The path of glory or the duty of stewardship, each with its own cost. Chapter 10. Hearts and Oaths. The night before Decimus's departure, Lucius walked the city, listening to the faint sounds of rebuilding, hammers striking wood, voices raised in song. He passed among his men and the Sarmatian camp, exchanging words and promises. At the walls, he found Arpad staring into the darkness. "Will you leave for Rome?" the Sarmatian asked. Lucius shook his head. "My duty is here, at the border. Rome may forget us, but if we fail, the Empire is doomed." Arpad smiled, teeth flashing. "Then we ride together." Lucius visited Aurelia in the temple, where she packed away her herbs. "If you stay, your life will never be easy," she warned. He took her hand. "It is not ease I seek, but meaning." Morning came. Lucius called his men and the city's notables together. "Rome's heart beats strongest on its borders. We will rebuild Aquincum and hold the Danube, whatever comes. You are my brothers, my charge, my family." Shouts of acclamation filled the square. Even Decimus, though disappointed, could not hide a measure of respect. Lucius's choice was made. He returned to the river, watching the sunlight glint on its surface, a promise and a warning. Chapter 11, Building the Future. The months that followed were filled with toil. With the Sarmatians' help, the Romans rebuilt the city's walls, planted new crops, and restored order. Lucius oversaw the work, assigning both soldiers and locals to repair aqueducts and granaries. Aurelia opened a permanent clinic, treating citizens and soldiers alike. Arpad's horsemen patrolled the far bank, warning of any new Quadi movement.
The old boundaries between Roman and barbarian blurred as friendships formed.
Lucius established regular councils, inviting Sarmatian and Roman voices alike. Disputes were settled, and new markets opened to draw trade from the countryside. Word spread along the frontier. Aquincum endured, a beacon in uncertain times. The city celebrated the festival of Perilia, honoring Rome's founding. Soldiers and locals danced around bonfires, and Lucius poured a libation to Jupiter Optimus Maximus for peace and victory. Late at night, Lucius and Aurelia walked along the riverbank. "Do you regret staying?" she asked quietly. He smiled, eyes reflecting the starlight. "No. Here, I have found purpose. Here, I am home." As the city slept, the Danube flowed on, witness to the rise and fall of empires, to a hope and courage of those determined to endure.
Chapter 12, The Wolves Kept at Bay. By year's end, the Danube's banks were hard with frost, but Aquincum's hearths glowed with new life. Lucius stood atop the city wall, cloak billowing in the cold wind. He watched Sarmatian riders return from patrol, their banners snapping. Peace was fragile. News from the south told of further unrest in Africa, and the emperor's throne remained precarious. But for now, the border held. Lucius gathered his men and allies. "We have faced the wolf's jaws and not been broken. Remember those who fell, but also what we have built together." Aurelia stood beside him, her presence steady. "The future is uncertain, but you have chosen where you belong." The city's bells tolled as children played in the streets and traders returned to the forum. For Lucius, legacy was not in monuments or imperial favor, but in faces like these, survivors, friends, and kin. As the Danube flowed on, Lucius vowed to hold the line as long as strength remained in his arm. The empire's fate would be written on its frontiers, by those willing to turn strangers into allies and hope into reality. The wolves still lingered beyond the river, but for now, they remained at bay. A Roman centurion in red cloak and a Sarmatian warrior in scale armor stand together on a snowy riverbank at sunset, gazing across the Danube as rebuilt city walls rise behind them. Roman frontier drama. In 240 AD, centurion Lucius Valerius forges uneasy alliances and faces betrayal to defend Rome's Danube frontier in a time of crisis and change. You've been listening to Via Anorum, part of StoryOmniverse.com. From the echoes of the past to the horizons of the future, another year awaits in the great story of time.